The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of this station. Content is for educational purposes only. Consult a financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence if investing. Calls are pre-screened and the show was pre-recorded earlier this week. Rick is with Edelman Financial Engines, a part of Financial Engines Advisors, LLC, and the investment advisor that furnishes this program. Barron's ranks financial advisory firms based on assets managed, team size, experience, and regulatory record. Firms self-nominate. Investment returns and experience are not considered. Advisors in the Hall of Fame have been in the top 100 for 10-plus years. Future performance is not guaranteed.
This is the Rick Edelman Show. Barron's ranks Edelman Financial Engines the number one independent investment advisor in the country. And Rick is in the Barron's Financial Advisor Hall of Fame. Now, here's Rick Edelman.
And a very happy weekend to you. Welcome to the Rick Edelman Show. Our top story today is one of international intrigue, massive economic and political implications around the world. No, I am not talking about Brexit. I'm talking about Mexit. Yeah, it seems everybody everywhere is talking about Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex.
Harry and Meghan's royal exit.
Megxit, as it's been dubbed now, inevitably.
Prince Harry and wife Meghan Markle.
Prince Harry and his wife Meghan.
Harry and Meghan.
Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Harry and Meghan.
The Duke and Duchess of Sussex.
Prince Harry and wife Meghan.
Meghan and Harry.
Harry and Meghan.
Harry and Meghan.
Harry, Meghan, and the royal family.
Yeah, everybody everywhere is talking about Harry and Meghan, so I might as well. But I'm going to give you an angle of it, of course, that nobody else is talking about. Yes, it's the financial planning implications for Harry and Meghan. They have announced, of course, that they want to step back from their roles as senior members of Britain's royal family. They said they want to become financially independent, stating on their website that they, quote, value the ability to earn a professional income, unquote. Well, good for them. I think that's wonderful. Do you have your kids that are laying on the couch eating bonbons, watching daytime soaps because you're handling all the money that they need and your mom's doing the wash and mom and dad are providing their cell phone coverage and their health insurance? And hey, go ahead, drive my car. I'll put gas in it for you, son. I mean, you got a spoiled rotten brat sitting on your sofa? That ain't nothing. We got Prince Harry here. This guy gets millions of dollars a year from simply being a royal. According to their website, they get 5% of their income from something called the Sovereign Grant. This is a fund that is paid for by British taxpayers. 5% of their income comes from that. The other 95% of their income comes from Harry's father, Prince Charles. He gives them, according to British press reports, $6.5 million a year.
Go!
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. So do the math. Their total income is nearly $7 million a year. They say they want to become financially independent, cutting all financial ties with their family, giving up that $7 million because they value the ability to earn a professional income. Great. What kind of professional income might they earn that's going to pay $7 million a year? Are they going to go on the speaking circuit? Host TV shows? Write books? Launch a clothing line, cosmetics, do a lifestyle blog? Will all that stuff pay $7 million a year? How are they going to live financially independently, as they say they want, without these income streams that they say they're willing to turn away? Well, here's how. According to press reports, Harry's net worth is $39 million, mostly inherited from his mother, Princess Diana. Meghan's net worth is around $5 million, mostly from her stint in the TV series Suits. So, okay, they're worth a total of $44 million. Well, I went and did the math, just like I would for any client who came to me and asked for a review of their personal finances, and I calculated that if we invest $44 million and we get 6% per year, that's a reasonable rate of return on a diversified portfolio, and we incur a 2% cost of living adjustment, meaning if they need $7 million this year, they're going to need 2% more than that next year to adjust for inflation. Well, he's 35 years old. Based on these numbers, they're going to be broke in 7 years.
Your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Yeah, he'll only be 42. If they want to let their money last to age 90, they're going to need to earn $5 million a year. In other words, their portfolio can generate about $2 million and have it last to age 90, but they're going to have to produce the rest. I'm wondering if these two are getting effective financial advice. I mean, it's wonderful to sit there and say, I'm fed up with being the recipient of all these handouts from Daddy and Grandmummy, and instead, I want to live on my own. I want to show that I can make it all by myself. Well, okay, good for you. But have you really done the calculations? I'm wondering how long their commitment is going to last once they discover what the cold, cruel world is really like. Hey, God bless them. I hope it works. I think they're sending a great message to everybody. Hey, you know what? Don't live off the trough. Don't assume that you're going to get an inheritance and it's going to solve all your problems. Take charge. Be in command. Be your own person. Just, you might want to lower your expectations a little bit and assume you're not going to live on $7 million a year, because I'm not quite sure that's really going to work. And in their efforts to make their personal finances work, they're going to have to make some investment decisions. Where is that $44 million invested right now? Well, let's take a look at the investment returns of the past decade, now that the 20-teens are over. The S&P 500 over the last 10 years earned 250%. Yeah, more than doubled over the last 10 years, the U.S. stock market. The bond market did well, a total return of 44%. Gold grew 37%. Real estate did fabulous as well, 208%. Not as good as stocks, but it doubled as well over the last 10 years. Oil did terribly, lost 30% in value for the past decade. But the asset class that has made more money than any other asset class by far, Bitcoin. It was up an astonishing 12 million percent.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious.
12 million percent. Bitcoin was invented in March of 2010. It came out around 5 cents back then. It's now $7,500. This is why you didn't hear about Bitcoin in 2010, and you've certainly heard about it now. In fact, Schwab just came out with its year-end annual report on the investments that people are buying in their self-directed brokerage accounts at Schwab. Of the top 10 holdings of millennials, the number one stock millennials own is Amazon. It's 8% of their portfolio. Number two is Apple. Number three is Tesla. Number four is Facebook. And number five is Bitcoin via the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. Millennials own Bitcoin more than they own Berkshire Hathaway, Disney, Netflix, Microsoft, or Alibaba. And in fact, State Street just did a survey of 100 asset managers, found that 94 of them hold digital assets. And nearly 40% say they're going to increase their allocation this year. And 45% believe that a Bitcoin ETF is going to get SEC approval this year. So we're beginning to see Bitcoin entering the mainstream. There are now more than 4,000 Bitcoin ATMs scattered around the United States. And Deutsche Bank just announced a couple of weeks ago that they believe crypto could replace cash by 2030. Over the next 10 years, you may see the elimination of cash, says Deutsche Bank. And then there's the Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges. In their official publication called Trusteeship, the governing boards of the nation's universities has said the following, quote, cryptocurrency is only a decade old and has already produced hundreds of millionaires, a number of billionaires, and may produce the world's first trillionaires in the next decade. So, yeah, Bitcoin seems to be here to stay. It is entering the mainstream, professional money managers almost universally owning it, saying they're going to increase their allocation to it. It's already one of the top five investments for millennials, according to Charles Schwab. And yet you still need to be very careful. You know that I'm a fan of Bitcoin and blockchain and digital assets generally, but we have to remember that it is fraught with risk. It is not considered a security by the SEC, therefore outside generally their domain from a regulatory perspective. And there's a lot of fraud in this Wild West environment. Just recently, the SEC charged somebody with defrauding investors in a digital asset fraud. They raised $42 million from hundreds of investors, spent all the money on entertainment and a dating service. In another scam recently, five men were charged in a Ponzi scheme. They raised over $700 million, and yeah, it was a cryptocurrency scam. One of the five defendants said their scam was built, quote, on the backs of idiots, unquote. So you need to make sure you're not one of those idiots. If someone is pitching Bitcoin to you, you need to talk with us, 888-PLAN-RICK. We can help make sure you understand what it is you're contemplating doing. We can help you verify, validate, confirm that what you're doing is legit as opposed to an outright fraud, and help make sure you understand the risks inherent with investing in Bitcoin or any other digital asset or cryptocurrency. I'm Rick Edelman, because after all, unlike Harry and Meghan, you don't have $44 million and a rich grandmother as queen to bail you out. 888-PLAN-RICK, online at ricestellman.com.
For free articles on personal finance, sign up for Rick's email update at rickedelman.com.
Welcome back to the program. Rick Edelman here on The Rick Edelman Show. 888-PLAN-RICK online at ricestellman.com. Why Rice Delman? Well, if you're new to the show, go ahead. Spell Rick Edelman quick. Nobody can. Rick Edelman? Nobody knows how to spell that. First of all, everybody puts a K on my name, and sorry, my mom said no K. So nobody spells Rick R-I-C. And nobody can spell Edelman, so Rice Delman. Very phonetic, very simple and easy to spell. So go to ricedelman.com. That's rickedelman.com. So there. Hope that helps clarify it for you. Hey, we just spent the last segment talking about Bitcoin and blockchain and digital assets, cryptocurrencies and the like. Those are just one small category of the broader subject of exponential technologies. One of the most favorite subjects for people to talk about in that area are SDVs, self-driving vehicles, and EVs, electric vehicles. So let me tell you some of the latest and greatest that's going on here. Facebook is mapping millions of miles of uncharted roads around the world. They're doing this with AI. They've mapped all of Thailand and 90% of Indonesia, and they did it in just 18 months. Meanwhile, Bosch and Daimler, that's, you know, Daimler of Mercedes-Benz, they have now developed a push-button, fully automated parking system. It's got level 4 automation, meaning it's truly hands-off functionality. They're doing this as a test at the Mercedes-Benz Museum in Germany. Drivers pull into the garage, they get out of the vehicle, and they initiate autonomous parking remotely through an app in their smartphone. Sensors in the garage guide the cars to open slots and later bring the car back to you at the front entrance. So imagine that. You just pull up, get out of the car, press a button on your phone, and the car drives away, parks itself. Pretty cool. Well, we're already having driverless deliveries in real life. Kroger, the big grocery store chain, they have already done over 1,000 deliveries via driverless automobile. It's a Toyota Prius, and yeah, there's a human in the car, just, you know, in case. It's not just cars that are autonomous. Drones are now autonomous as well. They, in Canada, they're doing drone deliveries. They're doing it to an island community in James Bay. The drones can carry up to 11 pounds of stuff, food, medicine, and mail, enabling people on this island to get, you know, a pizza that they couldn't get before. And it's not just self-driving vehicles. It's also self-flying vehicles as well. There is a company called Blackfly that, starting this year, is going to offer a single-seat plane a range of 30 miles, top speed of 60 miles an hour. That's a pretty slow aircraft. But guess what? No pilot's license is needed. Or how about EHang? It's a two-seater. It will also be available in the marketplace this year. It's a giant drone that is big enough to carry people. Then there's Volocopter, a two-seater, kind of looks like a helicopter, but with drone propulsion. 18 propellers, can carry two people on distances. And that ain't it. It's not just helicopters and drones that are going to be carrying people in the air. In Dubai, they're training their police force on the use of the hover bike. Yeah, it's a flying motorcycle. Weighs 250 pounds, costs $150,000, flies 25 minutes at an altitude of just 16 feet. I think we saw one of these things in one of the Star Trek movies, didn't we? Goodyear is now making tires for flying vehicles. I mean, well, why does a flying vehicle need a tire? Well, for the same reason airplanes do. At some point, it's going to land. They have unveiled the Aero Tire. It's designed to run on roads and serve as a propulsion system for flying vehicles. And this technology is going even beyond all this. Bell Helicopter, the largest manufacturer of helicopters in the U.S., has now designed a new helicopter, and in order to do it, it used VR, virtual reality. And as a result of that technology, instead of taking 7 years to design the helicopter, they did it in 6 months. This is an illustration of the kinds of changes we are going to fast see coming to a neighborhood near you, all thanks to innovations in exponential technologies, not just crypto assets, blockchain, Bitcoin, and the like, and not just self-driving vehicles, self-flying vehicles, and electric vehicles, but artificial intelligence, robotics, nanotech, biotech, bioinformatics, 3D printing, and the like. If you need to understand what all this stuff is, how it all works, what it means for you, read my New York Times bestseller, The Truth About Your Future, which explains these technologies and shows you the implications on your personal finances. And you've got to ask yourself a fundamental question. Does your portfolio have exposure to exponential technologies, to the companies that are either developing these innovations or the companies that are deploying them for the growth and development of their businesses? Is your portfolio mired in stocks of the 20th century as opposed to the stocks of the 21st century? How well versed is your financial advisor in the subject of exponential technologies? If you're not sure the degree to which your portfolio has exposure to this area, if you're not sure the degree to which your portfolio should have exposure to this, and which ETFs and mutual funds should you buy in order to give you this exposure, call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-752-6742, or visit us online at, yeah, you know where, ricedelman.com. Okay, let's change the subject. You've heard of Morningstar, of course. Morningstar is well known for its mutual fund ratings service. Morningstar has lately been trying to get into the bond ratings business. And recently, a little bit of a faux pas, it recently announced that 25% of the bonds it was rating would be downgraded. Well, when you downgrade a bond, you potentially lower its market value, and that is a really big problem. And so when they announced that 25% of the bonds are going to get downgraded, oh my goodness, that really caught the attention of a lot of folks in the financial services sector. But a few days later, Morningstar announced that, made a mistake. It turns out that 25% of the bonds are going to be upgraded, not downgraded.
Well, you say we try that one again, huh?
Yeah, only 3% of the bonds were facing downgradings. So my message to you is this. Look, you know, I don't mean to poke too much fun at Morningstar. My point is this, that even big companies can make a mistake from time to time. And just because you hear a piece of news, you need to maybe give it a little while and confirm that it's true and accurate, because you could have traded on that news, only to discover that, boy, you cost yourself a lot of money in the course of doing so. And that's kind of the big mistake. So you have to make sure you're capable of correctly interpreting the news when it comes. We have to evaluate the legitimacy of it and determine the implications of it on our portfolio and our investments. Because if we react too fast on rumor or conjecture or initial assertion, we may do the wrong thing at the wrong time for the wrong reason. So before you act, give us a call, 888-PLAN-RICK. Let us know what you've heard. Let us know what's concerning you, and we'll tell you what maybe you need to be doing about it. 888-PLAN-RICK, rickedelman.com.
More with the author of the number one national bestseller, The Truth About Retirement Plans and IRAs, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Welcome back to The Truth About Money. Rick Edelman here. We're at 888-PLAN-RICK. That's 888-752-6742. You can also go online to our website at rickedelman.com. Let's go to the telephones here on The Rick Edelman Show. Off to Cincinnati. Kyle's with us on the air. How are you, Kyle?
I'm doing great, Rick. Thank you for having me on the broadcast.
It's my pleasure. How can I help you?
Yeah, my question for you today has to do with deciding who to invest with. So my wife and I have been investing in a Vanguard Target Retirement Roth IRA for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
And after consulting with a financial advisor, I was encouraged to consider moving our Roth money over into his company.
Mm-hmm.
And the company he works for is a large national investment company, mm-hmm. and they work through my employer.
Okay.
So I already have a relationship with him. I've enjoyed working with him on some of my other retirement investments, but I have not moved our Roth accounts over because I started off with Vanguard. I liked their really, really low fees and their pretty simple investment strategy of choosing a large, diversified section of the market,
mm-hmm.
and allowing my wealth to grow as the market grows over the long haul. So
mm-hmm.
that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to keep that. But the financial advisor, however, explained that he can place our money into a diversified set of funds
mm-hmm.
that should outperform our Vanguard Target Retirement account
mm-hmm.
by a small percentage each year. So the way he explained it is it would be like maybe a slightly higher high one year and less low lows in other years. And year in, year out, that would make a massive difference over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So he also showed me data that supports his claim using specific selected funds that he uses.
Mm-hmm.
And then when stretched out over a 25-year time period, it would outperform Vanguard. So my question not only is like, which way should I go, but more helping me understand theoretically how a low-cost, diversified, indexed-style fund that mimics the market can be consistently beat by a company that charges higher fees and invests in more expensive funds. And I guess that's the first thing is I don't know how theoretically that could work. Because there's always going to be winners and losers, and I would just be trying to play a winner in my mind.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is just I also don't want to be a poor steward of the money that we've invested in, be so, you know, strong in my conviction and not at least consider the wisdom of trying something that over the long haul could have more success.
Gotcha. So there are a couple of things going on here. First, it is possible that what the advisor is describing to you is accurate, but it's not guaranteed. So we won't know until we fast forward 25 years to see if, in fact, it worked. So what we've got to do, as you said, is use our due diligence, make an informed decision that is reasonably expected to deliver the results we're hoping to obtain. And that means poring through the nature of his recommendations and comparing those to what you're currently doing. And I think it is possible that the advisor is correct. Now, notice I'm using the word possible, not guaranteed in any stretch. And the reason is this. There's a big difference between the portfolio construction of your target date fund and the portfolio construction of what the advisor is likely recommending. And here's the difference. When you're dealing with a target date fund, that fund offers you a mix of stocks and bonds and changes that mix as you age. The older you get, the less of it is in stocks. This is called the glide path. Picture an airplane at 40,000 feet approaching the airport. As it approaches, it gets lower in altitude. It's not a cliff, right? Airplanes don't drop straight down when they get to the airport. They slowly glide in to make it smooth and easy. And that's what target date funds do. As you get closer to your target date, to the age of retirement, they reduce the equity allocation. Now, here's the real question. What's the nature of the glide path? Is it a to or a through approach? Do you know the answer to that question with your Vanguard fund?
I do not. I just know that it's that it is targeted and it will eventually become more conservative, but I do not know the path that it will take.
So this is a huge issue because different target date funds perform differently with their glide path. Let me explain what to or through is. Some create a glide path to take you to retirement. And obviously that means at age 65, you would have very little in stocks. By then, it might be 20% of the portfolio is in stocks if they take you to retirement. Other funds take you through retirement all the way to your life expectancy of age 90, which means at age 65, you'll still have 60% of your money in stocks. So clearly, the nature of the glide path has a huge impact on the asset allocation and therefore a huge impact on the investment results you can expect to take. If your fund has a glide path of two, and your advisor's recommending a portfolio management structure that takes you through, then I think your advisor's very right that he's likely going to produce for you over the life of your investments a much higher return than what your current portfolio would generate. So you need to determine what is the glide path of the fund you're currently in so that you know if you're comparing apples to oranges, because if you are, the apples will win. But if you're current target date fund has the same glide path approach as what your advisor will be recommending, then it's not apples to oranges, it's now apples to apples, and the results will be much more similar. To your point, what's the point of doing this? Make sense?
Yeah. The only other question that I have, though, is that as I'm looking at, and I didn't even add this earlier, but we, as I had mentioned, we already have some money invested in him, and what he's recommending with the Roth is a similar approach to what we've done with our other money.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a similar risk category as what we would have in that retirement fund currently.
Makes
because
sense.
Of our age.
Yeah.
And he has outperformed over the last 3 years that we've worked with him. It's not only just how it would work to or through retirement, but it's also currently, it mm-hmm. seems like he's outperforming. And my feeling would be is I don't want to switch over just because I see a 3-year winner.
Sure.
Because sometimes he could win, sometimes he could lose as
sure.
compared to the current situation that we have
sure.
for Vanguard.
Sure. Let me take it a step further. You mentioned fees, and fees do matter. Now, I don't believe there's going to be a huge difference between the fee you pay with your current fund and the fees you'll pay for the new funds that your advisor will recommend. I think you should be able to obtain similarly low-cost funds with the new structure. But the difference is you will also have to pay the advisor's fee, which you currently do not pay. And that could add 1% or 2% on top of your current expenses. So you do have to evaluate, is it worthwhile, net of the advisor's fee, to make this change? And I'll give you a reason why the answer may be yes, even if the net expenses are higher. It could be because of the convenience factor. Right now, you've got money at Vanguard that you're dealing with entirely on your own. No advice, no support, no service. If there's something that's got to get done, you're the one that's got to get it done. You're the one who has to make the phone call to Vanguard or deal with the paperwork or go online or whatever. Your advisor can't help you with that because your advisor isn't the advisor of record on that account. By consolidating your assets with a single advisor, the chore factor goes down. The hassle factor goes down. You now have the complete services of your advisor to handle everything. Your advisor can now integrate in their analysis and evaluation, in their ongoing monitoring of your accounts, in the tax reporting and record keeping. Your advisor can do all of that, making your life a whole lot easier to the point where it could very well be worth paying that little extra fee for the benefits that you're obtaining. Not to mention the fact that your advisor's fee may actually go down overall, because a lot of advisors charge fees that are based on the value of the account you're letting them manage. In other words, by adding your new account to your existing account at the advisor, you might get a new lower fee on all of your assets. So for all of these reasons, even if the net result isn't materially different between what you're currently getting and what the advisor's recommending, which of course we won't know the answer to that for 25 years, it all in all just very well may be justifiable. It may in fact be in your best interest, or certainly arguably in your favor.
Excellent.
Anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome, Kyle. Thank you so much for calling.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. That was Kyle in Cincinnati here on the Rick Edelman Show. You can do what Kyle did. Call us at 888-PLAN-RICK. If you've got questions or conundrums about opportunities and you're trying to decide this or that, we can help you figure it out. 888-752-6742. Online at ricedelman.com.
With the founder of the nation's largest independent investment advisory firm, coming up on The Rick Edelman Show.
Welcome back to the program. Rick Edelman here. We're going to take some Ask Ricks here on the program. You can do what these folks did. Go to your smartphone and record your voice using the voice recorder, and then send me your voice recording to askrick@rickedelman.com. Here's Dan.
Hi, Rick. This is Dan in Hempstead, New York. My question to you regards choosing a personal financial planner. So I've been looking at that over the last few months, and in my situation, I have a few buckets of money out there from former employers, 401ks, 457s, and 453bs, and so I'm looking at getting everything kind of together under one roof and making a plan going forward. So I've come down to two. One is a large financial services brokerage firm that offers independent financial advisory services for a very low fee. The other is a very large independent fee-based financial planner whose fees are somewhat higher, but whose services seemed a little bit more customized. So my question to you is, would it ever make sense in a situation like mine, and I'm 59, to give half to one planner and half to another and then see how the customer service is and how things go over the next year or two? What do you think?
It's a common dilemma, Dan, as folks are trying to answer that very question. And our experience shows over the past 30 plus years that you're better off choosing one. And the reason that we say that, actually, there are two major reasons. First, if you're going to split your assets between two different advisors or advisory firms, you become the quarterback. You become the person who is responsible for coordinating all of the activities, because neither of the advisors has all of the information. And that means you're responsible for letting A know what B is doing, and conversely telling B what A is doing, so that you increase your workload. You're also increasing, literally doubling, your paperwork. You now have two sets of brokerage accounts. That's two sets of tax return pieces of information. You're getting two of everything. And more to the point, and this is the second reason it's a problem, is that you are now going to be placing yourself in a situation where the advice you're getting from one advisor contradicts the advice you're getting from the other advisor. They may put you into investments that are totally opposed to each other or incredibly redundant to each other. So you're not really doubling your value by having two advisors. You are simply doubling the work, doubling the inefficiency, doubling the hassle. So that's one big problem. The other big problem is that the reason people attempt this is, as you cited, let me try them both out and see how they do. Well, the problem there is that how they do in terms of investment performance could be fleeting. Just because one of them might make more money than the other, A, you might be taking far greater risks with one of the accounts than the other accounts, so it's an apples to oranges comparison, faulty data, flawed analysis, or worse, you're more likely to say, hey, one of them made a lot more money than the other, I'm going to shift all my money to that one. In other words, you're going to be making a decision based on the short-term historic result, even though we all know that past performance does not guarantee future results. So we find that it's usually an ineffective strategy that in the long run does not derive satisfactory results for the client. Therefore, what I would recommend instead is that you simply decide what matters to you. And you articulated it very nicely, the differences between the two firms. One of them was cheaper with more limited services. The other one was more expensive with broader services. Well, okay. Which one is more important to you? Saving money or getting the services you need? It's really that simple. I mean, this is how people choose the difference between going to McDonald's and going to a white tablecloth restaurant with a maitre d'. It's not just the food. It's also the experience. It's the quality of the entire relationship that really matters. And I'll add one final thing. Because I've got a lot of experience in this industry and can tell you that when you're dealing with cheap, as you called it, services, the difference is predominantly in the sustainability of the advisor you're going to be dealing with. So I'm not presenting this to you as a factual issue, although it is factual. It's an attitudinal thing. It's a personal preference thing. And here's what I mean by this. At organizations that are offering very inexpensive services, you are meeting with them over the phone. You'll never meet with them face to face. And the person that they assign to you is a person who has probably been doing this only for several months, maybe a year, and is going to be leaving that job in several months. Maybe a year. Not, I'm not suggesting they're going to get fired. I'm suggesting they're going to get promoted. Because when you're in one of these huge organizations, these folks are treating the current gig as a stepping stone to something bigger, better in their careers. And turnover at the client level, meaning clients experience a constant change in who their rep is because the reps are constantly relocating, going to other departments within the company, getting promoted, and so on and so forth. And you end up with no one on a long-term sustained basis. So what I would encourage you to do is to ask the rep that you're dealing with at the firm, how long have you been a rep in this job? What is your career aspiration? Do you plan on doing this as your career for the rest of your working life? Or do you hope to move on to other things? Because that will tell you a lot. On the other hand, advisors that are charging more, well, they're charging more because they have to compensate their advisors more because their advisors are lifetime advisors. At least in a firm like ours, that's the case. Our advisors have no aspirations to be anything other than advisors. This is their chosen career. It's sort of like a physician in the emergency room. That's all they want to do is be a physician. They don't want to go into hospital administration. They don't have aspirations of moving into something else. This is what they do. So your doctor is your doctor in your, you know, GP practice, or in your cancer doctor is your cancer doctor for as long as you're alive, other than retirement, right? And so that's what you have to decide. Does it matter to you? Does it matter that you're going to deal with an 800 number with an individual who is likely to be moving on in several months? Or maybe even an 800 number where you're going to a call center and you're never even dealing with the same person two times in a row. You're going to deal with whoever answers the phone. Does that bother you? Now, for a lot of folks, it doesn't bother them. That's why I said this is not a factual thing. It's a judgment. It's a personal preference thing. Does it bother you that there's no personal deep relationship, someone who gets to know you and your family intimately to understand how to best provide advice for you? Some folks, doesn't matter. It's kind of transactional in their mind. And that's why these firms exist, because they're catering to a marketplace, recognizing that there are a lot of consumers that just want the basic service at as low a cost as they can get it. And that's perfectly fine. Others demand greater handholding. They want the services of someone who gets to know them very well understands their quirks, their desires, their motivations, their fears, their goals, and can provide them with long-term services, and doing it face-to-face with a meeting once a year or more as needed, et cetera, et cetera. So you get what you pay for is what it comes down to. And you need to decide beyond all else what matters to you so that you are able to get what it is you want. And I think you'll discover that when you analyze it and evaluate it that way, you'll be able to make a good choice as to which of these two firms is better for you, rather than splitting your money between the two. If you've got a similar conundrum or question as to what kind of firm you should hire, call us. And by the way, it's not uncommon for us to get a phone call from someone who explores hiring us, and we conclude that we're not the right firm for them, because what they want, how they want it, what matters to them in services and fees or what have you, we conclude that there are other firms better suited to their needs, and we're very quick to tell you that. The last thing we want to do is bring on a client into the firm that's a bad fit, because that just means no one's going to be happy. The client's not going to be happy, and as a result, we're not going to be happy either, and the client's going to end up leaving anyway. So we work really hard to identify this in advance so that when it's a good fit, we become at the hip forever. So you're asking the right question, and I hope this helps you go about it in the right way. I'm Rick Edelman. It's all the time we've got here this weekend. I look forward to talking with you next weekend. 888-PLAN-RICK online at ricedelman.com. That's a wrap.
As a reward, you'll have no radio for the rest of the week. Go to your room.
See you next week.
Get the truth about money every weekend on The Rick Edelman Show.